Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
This is Band from Ringside.
Tonight on the Band from Ringside podcast, we RIP Brody Lee. Not much more to say than that. We're going to do our Wrestle Kingdom preview. NXT had a great show last night with an even better show coming up next week. That and a whole bunch more tonight on the Band from Ringside podcast. You know, if Jason was here, he would make fun of how bad that intro was, but I don't give a shit. Ditch that 9 to 5. It's time to feel alive. Hello, Mark. So welcome to the Band from Ringside podcast. As always, I am your host, Bill Vagie, a.k.a. Job Holly. And out there in Edwardsville, Illinois, we have Two Beers Zach Pullman. What's going on, Two Beers Zach?
Doing all right. Had a Molly Holly Christmas. I mean, a Holly Jolly Christmas.
There you go.
And, yeah, just pretty much like sitting here with like a tight throat and like red rimmed eyes because like I just like watched a bunch of Brody Lee stuff today. So definitely pretty emotional week overall, all things considered.
Yeah. Jason is not here today. Jason, it's a big week where Jason works. Jason's restaurant is a very nice restaurant. Jason is an extremely good server. And they need him all week, and this is kind of a big week for them. So hopefully Jason is making a bunch of money. He will be back next week for our Wrestle Kingdom recap show, I suppose, right? Yeah, it's going to be our recap show. And so we miss him, but hopefully he's out there doing it. I don't know the F&B Eatery spiel, so go check out F&B Eatery on Southampton in St. Louis. It's the best smash burger you've probably never had, but you should. It's good as shit. Without further ado, because I got to get to a New Year's Eve party. This is New Year's Eve right now. We're recording it. It might not go up until this weekend. Zach, do you have any big plans for New Year's?
I'm gonna play PlayStation.
Ooh, that sounds like fun. Which game?
Yeah.
Altered Beast?
I've been playing Uncharted 4. I bought a PS5, and I'm just catching up on all the PS4 games that I've never got a chance to play because I own an Xbox last generation. So.
Do they still do Final Fantasy?
Yeah, for sure. Final Fantasy 15.
15, huh?
Most recent incarnation.
I used to play regular Final Fantasy on regular Sega before the Genesis. That's how old I am.
Oh, yeah, the Master System.
Yeah, the Master System that played Altered Beast if you didn't put a game in, which was pretty cool. Let's get to that wrestling, Zach. Let's get to that. Three count.
One, two, three.
All right, so the one count has to be Brody Lee. Brody Lee, a.k.a. Luke Harper, his real name was John Huber, passed away at the age of 41, and that is a fucking bummer because apparently if you watched AEW last night and even if you watched WWE television, there was a lot of tributes to him. He apparently was a super, super great guy. Obviously, I didn't know him, and I didn't know his personal life at all. But everybody sang his praises, remembered him quite fondly. The AEW Dynamite last night was a legit great tribute. It felt appropriate. All the Dark Order teams went over, which I felt was a nice little piece of booking by Tony Khan. I know that he said he put a lot of thought into it, and I'm sure he did. The tribute videos were moving, I would say, for lack of a better term. It was he died of an COVID-unrelated lung issue. I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure if it was something that he had for a long time. He was always somebody that we talked about on this podcast as kind of being, I mean, certainly underutilized in WWE. There were times where we thought, man, he should be a main eventer because apparently he started out as kind of a high flyer for a big guy, and then he turned into like a kind of a mix of a, you know, a bruiser and a luchador. I mean, frankly, I mean, he could have been. He probably didn't do that now. He was 41 years old. Zach, what are your thoughts on Brody Lee's passing?
Yeah, I mean, obviously super unexpected. There's been a bunch of stuff that's been said, and definitely echo all those sentiments for sure. We've always talked kindly of him. Just his work on this podcast, he's definitely been kind of an unsung hero for us, and he got his chance to shine finally in AEW for a little while. But yeah, I mean, he dropped the belt to Cody, and then the idea was for him to have a little bit of time off and then come back, you know, kind of bigger, better than ever. You know, his whole character in AEW is that intelligent monster like Bruiser Brody was in Japan. And he just was on his like Peloton bike one day, and he got really, really tired and couldn't catch his breath, and ended up like going to the doctor, and then ended up being in the ICU, and just, yeah, essentially his lungs just stopped working. Like, he was at the Mayo Clinic, I think, whenever he died. So really messed up. Kind of one of those, you know, things that remind you of your own mortality, count your blessings and stuff like that. But the tribute show was just phenomenal. I mean, it was the best tribute show I've ever seen for a wrestler by far. The amount of thought that went into this thing. And I was listening to Observer Radio the other day, and Dave Meltzer said that he was on the phone with Tony Khan like late one night. I guess it was like midnight his time. It would have been like 2 a.m. or whatever where Tony Khan was. And Tony Khan essentially stayed up all night that night and rewrote the entire show and didn't sleep. And like you said, did the bit where put the everybody on the Dark Order over all the Dark Order folks, and even the non-Dark Order folks were doing tributes, whether it was Lance Archer dressing up like Luke Harper, or people doing the spinning lariats, or people doing the you know, sidewalk slams, things that Brody Lee did in his moveset, right?
His repertoire. Yeah, and his Twitter thing was, every Monday night he would tweet, "It's Monday night, you know what that means." And then when he went to
he did it every day. Tuesday, you know what
he did it. Yeah, and shit, I can't remember the guy. Tom Phillips said it to open up Raw, and then Drew McIntyre came out, and when he started his promo, that's what he did too. There was a bunch of those spinning lariats on. I guess that would have been Raw. I guess he wasn't. Did he pass away the day after Christmas? Yeah, he had not passed away on SmackDown. So, SmackDown aired. Yeah, I agree. I thought the tribute show was tremendous, to be honest. There was lots of good wrestling. The tributes were especially heartbreaking. The one by Jon Moxley makes me think that Jon Moxley, the character, isn't that different than Jonathan Good, the person, because...
Dude, I honestly don't think Jon Moxley and Jonathan Good are different people. You know what I mean? Like, I think you're 100% right.
Yeah, I don't want to say he cut a promo, but, I mean, he talked about it. That was emotional. When they talked to the referee, that was really...
Bryce Rimsburg killed me, and so did Eddie Kingston. Like, if you watch that thing and, like, you have dry eyes, like...
The Eddie Kingston one was particularly tough.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, like, tearing up just, like, thinking about this thing. It was so emotional, and they did such a good job. And, I mean, like, I was at Raw as Owen, like, live, because Owen died in Kansas City, and they were in St. Louis the next night.
Right.
And, I mean, talk about a bummer, right? And the show sucked. Like, nobody had it in them. And this is like the polar opposite of that. Like, everybody out there like had something to prove, right? They really wanted to put on a good wrestling show as a tribute, right? You know, like, and they succeeded. I mean, this is like the model. I feel like anytime, you know, this happens, and unfortunately it does happen, but I mean, this is kind of the archetype, right? Like, this is this is what you want to see. They did such a good job. Real class act.
Yeah, it was great. The other thing that I was going to say, I completely forgot, but I liked how his son was there. His son seemed to be genuinely excited to be part of the show when he hit MJF with the kendo stick. When I saw that MJF pulled the mask off, I was like, are they really doing that? And then the joy on that, I don't know, I guess that kid's probably, what, seven? Six or seven?
I think he's eight.
I mean, it was really touching. Like, now I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It was really touching, and, you know, MJF really put that kid over. MJF sold it like a motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, they gave that kid a night of joy in the worst week of his life.
Yeah.
And they gave him and his little brother a show to watch forever, like, in perpetuity. Like, they'll be able to look on that forever.
Yeah, and the tribute video at the end, I wish some of the pictures would have gone slower, because there was a bunch of WWE pictures in there. There was a bunch of him with, you know, people that you never really even associated with. You know, I never really thought about Luke Harper and Sami Zayn, or Luke Harper and Roman Reigns that much, you know. Or, you know, he it seemed like he was genuinely just a great dude. And I mean, it's a real loss. He was probably in the prime of his career, despite his age. You know, he was finally positioned as somebody who was near or at the top of the card. And the dude could work. The dude was great. He was great. We everybody here at BFR has been a big Luke Harper / Brody Lee guy for a long time. We were pissed when he didn't go over Cody. We were pissed when they didn't put him in that Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton WrestleMania match as a triple threat, the Bill specialty. So he's actually, his presence will be missed. He was great. And
I want to go back and watch his Dragon Gate stuff, like against Shingo, and his Shikara stuff against Fire Ant, aka Orange Cassidy, when he had the mask and he was just like a pure luchador. So hopefully we can find some of that stuff. And WWE Network did a great job. They put up a bunch of stuff too, a bunch of Luke Harper matches. So they were kind of kinder than anticipated. We shit on WWE a lot, but they kind of did right.
It definitely seems so. And it didn't really seem like he went out on bad terms. He just asked for his release. And we should also point out that Eric Redbeard, a.k.a. Eric Rowan, came out last night and made his AEW debut.
Yeah, Jericho was, like, so excited. He's like, Eric Rowan. And Excalibur's like, Eric Redbeard. He's like, you're not supposed to say Eric Rowan.
But he was obviously real torn up. Bray Wyatt's Instagram was very, very sad. I mean, it's just sad all around. I mean, Brody Lee's my age, you know, and that
your age exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And it fucking blows, man. So RIP Brody Lee. We hardly knew ye. And I honestly, there's not much more to say than that. So let's get to that two counts.
One.
All right, Zach, what's the two count here?
Two count is, believe it or not, we've got Wrestle Kingdom next week.
Ooh, weekend, buddy.
Essentially.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty bonkers that, I mean, maybe it's because of the, the proximity so close to the G1. It just doesn't seem like it should be Wrestle Kingdom, even though the weather's getting colder and it's definitely like post holidays, like that part of it definitely feels like we're in Wrestle Kingdom territory. But I don't know, it's just been a really messed up year. And
yes, it certainly has been.
Yeah, so you know, we're gonna get two Tokyo Dome shows, and you know, hopefully it's as good as ever. You know, they're definitely gonna suffer because they're not gonna have 80,000 people in there.
Are you surprised that they're going with the two-night event, even despite the fact that, you know, it was a slower year and we just got off of G1? Or do you think it's the good move?
I am surprised, but I feel like it's more this is what they already had planned, and obviously they're gonna pivot and think on their head, you know, or think on their feet in 2020. But I also feel like being kind of the conservative nature of the Japanese companies, they're kind of like, they don't rock the boat too much, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, this is what we had planned and this is what we're going to do. And, you know, but I don't know how cost effective that is. You know, I don't know what it costs to rent the Tokyo Dome, but probably a ton. And they're not going to be getting a lot back on it. And they don't have any American stars to really drum up the American subscriptions, you know, like guys like me and you and Jason, like we keep it $12 a month, but you know, whenever they get like a Jericho or a Moxley or something, there's a lot of folks that it'll pop for a month and they get a bunch of new subs.
Yeah, there's really only four gaijin on the card completely with a total of 15 matches. I mean, not counting that 22 man New Japan Rambo match that's happening on night one. What are you looking forward to the most?
I really am looking forward to, and I'm kind of putting the cart in front of the horse here, I'm looking forward to Ibushi getting his IWGP title. Because talk about guys that aren't getting any younger, like, he's close to Harper's age, you know, or Brody Lee's age. Like, he looks like he's 25.
I was just going to say, he looks 25.
Yeah, but he is not, right? And the way that he puts himself out there, he acts like he could bump forever. But, I mean, unless he's some kind of, like, Marvel superhero, like, or maybe he'll end up like Misawa and die in the ring, you know, God forbid. But, I mean, the dude's a mega talent and mega star and childhood dream to have this belt, and he signed this lifetime contract with New Japan. So I really, as much as I love Naito, you know, he's kind of on the decline as far as like his career, and it's time for Ibushi to shine. So that's what I'm hoping for.
So Naito Ibushi is headlining night one, and that's for both the belts. So I'm guessing that you are predicting that Ibushi wins.
Yes, that is my prediction.
And the second night, so that would be Ibushi versus Jay White. Do you think that Ibushi is going to win that match also?
Yeah, so if he wins the first, I feel like he's got to win the second. Now, if I feel like, I say he has to, but he doesn't. I mean, that would be a total heat seeker if Jay White took the belt from him and he only had a 24-hour reign. And that could happen. Then they could, you know, rematch at Dominion or whatever. And they have really great matches together also. So, you know, an Ibushi Naito match, just all from the ones we've seen, like, I remember the last time they had one, I said, I never want to see this match again, even though they're phenomenal.
Right.
And just imagine what they're going to do in the Tokyo Dome. They're, you know, it's going to be brutal.
I know. I'm actually worried about them.
Yeah. And then Ibushi has to go and wrestle again in another main event. And that's the whole idea behind the story, right? Jay White's total heel. And he's like, I'll take my briefcase, you know, on night two, and the briefcase that he essentially stole from Ibushi. So,
right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of, those are the big main events.
So and when I started watching New Japan, Okada was the champ, and Okada was the champ forever, because I started watching it. I mean, I don't mind saying it, that my entry level into New Japan was Omega Okada 1, and Okada had it forever until Omega won it in the third match?
Yep. It was the fourth one.
It was the fourth match.
Tanahashi.
Right. So, really, My idea of the New Japan heavyweight belt was that, you know, people had it for a long time. And ever since then, it kind of feels like they've been hot-shotting it around. That being said, I think Jay White goes over Ibushi. I think Ibushi wins night one, and then I think Jay White wins night two. And then Ibushi's going to be in chase mode for pretty much the next year or so. That would
I mean, that's definitely a good story, like, for sure. And it definitely keeps, you know, interest in heat and, you know.
Yeah, and it keeps the everybody's still going to be mad at Jay White, and after Ibushi took, or after Jay White took the briefcase, and now he's going to take the belt too. And I wouldn't be surprised if we got some shenanigans, some chicanery. A couple other matches, you go ahead and run down the card for us.
Yeah, so night one, we're starting with that New Japan Rambo, which is the 22-man battle royal, and then it's like the last four people in the ring will then, on night two, go on to have a four-way match for the provisional King of Pro Wrestling 2021 trophy. So it's just a gimmick thing. It'll be fine. Like, nothing like too sensational, though, but it could be cool. Then we got Hiromu Takahashi versus El Phantasmo. So we have the winner of the Best of the Super Juniors, Hiromu Takahashi, versus the winner of the Super El Phantasmo. And they're going to have an absolutely banger match. And the winner of this match on night two will go on to face Taiji Ishimori for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. And no matter who wins, they will also have a banger match, but I am banking on Takahashi to take both nights because he's the guy. Like, he is, you know, he's the, Kushida, he's the Jushin Liger of that division, right? Like, he's the ace. He is the junior division, in my opinion. And then we got Dangerous Techers, which is the Tai Chi and Zack Sabre Jr. versus G.O.D., Gorillas of Destiny.
Now, let me ask you something real fast. Did you know that Tai Chi and Sabre Jr. were called the Dangerous Techers?
I have not heard that term used.
I have never heard that term used.
I'm reading it off of Wikipedia, so I've never heard Kevin Kelly say it. If he has, then I just haven't picked up on it. I also watch a lot of those shows anymore in Japanese too, because a lot of times I'm not able to watch the, or like really listen to the audio anyway when I'm catching up on these. So
are you picking anything up? Can you speak Japanese now?
I wish Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
So Tai Chi and Sabre Jr. versus Gorillas of Destiny, who you got?
You know, like, the tag division New Japan is not like super strong. I don't know. I guess Gorillas of Destiny are probably sticking around. They're staying over there. I don't know, you know, because they were on New Japan Strong earlier this year, which is a really fun show, by the way. If you missed the old NXT, that was just an hour long and it had like actual developmental talent, like really, you know, with really great matches, like, you would love New Japan Strong. So another reason to get that New Japan World. But I don't know, man. Tai Chi and Zack Sabre, really good team, and I would not mind them keeping it, but I don't know, I guess it just depends on, like I said, whether or not Gorillas of Destiny are staying over there or not, or maybe they bring the titles back to America and to the LA Dojo. I don't know.
Tai Chi, unlike the rest of humanity, had a spectacular 2020. And he's made a believer out of me. I love him.
Yeah, man, he's really, really coming to his own, for sure. Had some really great matches this year. So.
I know. I don't want to spoil anything for the beefers that are coming up. And I don't know if it's going to be my match of the year, but that Tai Chi Ibushi match from G1 that was all kicks until the very end, might be the most memorable match for me of 2020. Just because it was so out of the ordinary, and it really, man, I feel like watching it right now. I wish I could, but I don't have it on this downstairs TV. but yeah, I'm a Tai Chi mark now, and I've been a Zack Sabre Jr. mark for a long time. I'm going to take the Dangerous Techers. I wish I would have known that was their name. I like that name. Okay.
Yeah, I'll take them too. If you're writing them down, I'll take them too.
I am not writing it down. Well, maybe I should write it down because then we could Jason the big old goose egg. Suck ass. Next up, we have Kenta, and I don't know Satoshi Kojima.
You probably do. I mean, you would know him, like, if you saw him. But he's kind of like one of those old guard New Japan guys. But, like, he can still go, right? You know, he is what? He's probably 50 or so.
I'll look it up.
But out.
He was born in 70. He's 50 years old. Very good, Zach.
I'm so good.
Fucking really
but
good.
You're a nerd. Son can't really go anymore. But Kojima is still, like, pretty great. Like, this guy can really work, and they're going to have a banger match. I think it's probably, like, low-key the sleeper match of the entire card. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised.
Really? There's a couple bangers coming up here.
Oh, yeah, but just, like, a sleeper match where you're just, like, you know, you said, you're like, he's not really, if you've gotten into New Japan, like, recently and you don't watch the undercard, and they don't do the undercards really anymore, right? But even before that, you know, in the past few years, you didn't really watch the undercard, or you skipped over some G1 matches, you know, like, because he's, you know, been in those the past few years, not recently, but it wasn't all that long ago.
Who skips over G1 matches?
I don't know,
fucking dorks.
I still think, I mean, it's going to be Kenta, right? Because as cool as Kojima is, like, he's not the draw that Kenta is.
Sure.
Anymore.
Tanahashi versus Great Okan, who he, if I remember correctly, he kind of showed up during some shenanigans in the G1, correct?
Yeah, so he's, like, the first member of Will Ospreay's new stable. So I came in and really messed with Okada, and that's whenever they had his first big match against Okada at the last pay-per-view. And then now going to be in there with Tanahashi, which the Okada match was okay. Wasn't anything special. So, which is kind of a bummer. Cause I mean, if you're in there with Okada, you're going to expect His stuff all looks fine. He's, like, totally fine, but, like, I don't know if it's, like, a charisma thing or what, but it's not, he doesn't come off, like, super great. And I'm sure he's going to go over Tanahashi, because my biggest gripe with New Japan this year is they beat Tanahashi like a goddamn drum. And I know that he's on the decline. His twilight years, like, his career is nearing its zenith, right? But so is, like, for instance, like, Chris Jericho. And I could literally name every pinfall that Chris Jericho has suffered in his entire AEW run, because they are that meaningful. They make those losses meaningful, and they make them actually get over new talent, whereas, like, Tanahashi just loses everything all the time. And he just, like, he shouldn't be that, because he is the ace. I mean, obviously not anymore, but he carried New Japan through its dark days and helped it be what it is today. And it's just a big kind of sticking point with me. But I'm sure he's going to lose again at Wrestle Kingdom.
I mean, he probably should. He was born in 76, and Great Okan was born in 91. You know, like, I get what you're saying. You have to have those old guys win so that the losses count more.
Yes.
I totally get it. And I'm not arguing with that. Tanahashi should be putting guys over, but you also have to have Tanahashi win a bunch so that the wins mean more. That's wrestling 101. Let me book the fucking territory.
Yeah, he went 1-8 in the World Tag League.
Yeah, that's you're right. That's inexcusable. It doesn't make any sense. Next up is a banger, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these guys are always great together, Okada and Ospreay. Who do you have? I'm going to have my ideas.
You know, this is a tough one because Ospreay is, a newly defined heel, basically. it makes more sense for Ospreay to go over. You know, because Okada had the belt for so long, I kind of think about Okada like he's this old vet, which he is a vet. He is not old, though. Great Okan's going to beat Tanahashi. I think Will Ospreay beats Okada.
I think so, too, because I think 2021 is going to be a big year for Will Ospreay. So they've given him his own stable.
Right.
He is definitely, moved up from the junior heavyweight to the heavyweight. And I feel like he and Ibushi will have some amazing battles over this IWGP championship in years to come.
Let me ask you this. If we get Ibushi and Ospreay, if we get four matches out of those guys, is it possible the four matches out of those guys can surpass four matches out of Okada Omega?
I imagine anything's possible, but I think it's going to be really hard to top that in our lifetime. I don't know. It's tough. Like
that fourth match was just, yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Just a level of care, and I know that they're both fantastic and they're both very special talents and they both are, super into what they do. I mean, if anybody's going to do it, I think they are good candidates to do it.
Right. Yeah, me too. And Ospreay's, like we talked about, Ibushi's probably 38. Let me check real fast. Ibushi was born in 82. Yeah, he's 38. Ospreay is much younger than that. Ospreay was born in 93, so he is 27. So, man, Ospreay's got a lot.
Dude, imagine how good Ospreay is going to be in, just even a few more years. Because, a lot of wrestlers say they don't really get – they feel like they're not really at the top of their game until they're in their, mid-30s.
Yeah, I mean, look at Brody Lee. I mean, I haven't watched all of his old stuff, but I know that he was fucking great now. I mean, there's no way that he was better back then just in terms of storytelling and in terms of in-ring work. He might have been quicker when he was younger, of course. But, I mean, just look at him. He was 41 years old and still doing tremendous work. And You look at a guy like Ospreay, he's only going to get better. Because it's not all about the quickness and it's not all about the flippy stuff, that the Revival hates. It's about in-ring storytelling and being able to make guys look good and, having all the tricks. And Ospreay, as a 27-year-old, the sky's the limit. It really is.
For sure. Yeah, he's already so great. I mean, already top five wrestler in the world, in my opinion.
I agree. He's fucking great. Then we have the aforementioned Naito versus Ibushi. We've talked about this. Both of us have Ibushi going over. Naito Ibushi, one of my favorite matches of last year's G1 was when Ibushi almost died during that match.
Oh, God, yeah.
That was when he hit his head on the apron. It wasn't a Hurricane Rana, but it was something like that, and he almost died. I mean, it was legit fucked up to watch.
God, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, I recommend going back and watching it. All right, night two. What we got, Zach?
Night two, we have that four-way like we talked about. Then we have a tag match for the Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. Suzuki-Goon, which is Desperado and Kanemaru, versus Taguchi and Master Wato. I don't really see the belts changing hands here. Master Wato has looked a little better lately than he did. I don't know if it was just the gimmick or the blue hair. I don't know. I wasn't super hot on Master Wato whenever he first came back from excursion. But he's growing on me. But I still don't see these guys dropping the belts.
I'll admit, I don't know any of those guys. I know the name Suzuki Gun. I'm sure I've seen them. The other guys are called 1 or 8, which is a strange name for a tag team. Yeah, I don't think I know any of those guys. But I do know the guys in the next match.
He's the guy that always does the butt stuff. He always does, like, the butt bounce, the butt bumps and stuff.
Are you calling me Taguchi?
Yes.
Because I'm always doing the butt stuff.
Oh, man.
That felt like a Zach joke. I can't believe I beat it you. I can't believe I beat that. I beat you to it. Next up, for the Never Openweight Championship, I know both of these guys. We got Shingo versus Jeff Cobb. I am going to take Shingo. I can't see Jeff Cobb going over here, even though, you know, we talked about throughout the whole G1, Jeff Cobb had a better G1 than last year, and it feels like he's really finding his spot in the New Japan roster, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, would it have been cool for him to sign with AEW? Yeah, it definitely would have. And he, you know, wrestled that one match against Cody, and they really wanted him. They tried to sign him, but I think he's going to do great things in New Japan, and I think he'll be even more desirable in a couple years once he's really established himself over there. And I mean, who better to, I mean, you have the best workers in the world, right? And you're working all the time. And I think it's great. Shingo, I think he's definitely taken this. He was in 2020, the winningest wrestler in all of New Japan. Nice little stat for you.
Was he your favorite wrestler of 2020? Because I know you're a mark for him.
Dude, I love him so much. He could have been. He easily could have been.
Man, that match versus Suzuki in G1 just fucking ruled.
Oh, God. And his Okada match, too.
Yeah.
But, like, I got to do all that thinking on the beefers. That's why I texted you guys those lists, because I was like, oh, I got to start thinking about this shit. Because even though it was such a messed up year, right, we have pre-pandemic stuff, at least for a couple months. But then the rest of it's all pandemic stuff. And I feel like I have an easier time remembering the pandemic stuff. But we still did have like 3 months of kind of regular wrestling, and we had a Wrestle Kingdom that was January 4th, and
right. A lot of good fans. So I forget, and I probably ask this every year because this will be our fourth beefers, maybe our fourth beefers. So I forget. Do we do it at the end of the calendar year or the fiscal year, the WrestleMania year?
It's the calendar year. It's January 1st to December 31st.
Fuck. So is next week the beefers?
It doesn't have to be. I mean, it's our show.
It is our show. That's a good point. Man, I'm going to have to do a lot of thinking on that. But you're right. Like, it's going to be hard. I know that I'm going to talk about that All Kicks match a bunch. Everything else is up in the air. Right now I'm watching the WWE. Right now I'm watching WWE matches of the year. And just in the background, and they're showing Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly, which we'll get to later, because NXT has got a banger of a show next week. But for now, we're both taking Shingo. Up next, we have, this is the match that never ends. It's Evil versus Sonata. I mean, who you got?
I feel like Sonata's got to get, you know, some redemption here. And Evil's always on his bullshit with Dick Togo. And, you know, Evil definitely had a really good year. I mean, he was a double champion. And he didn't have the greatest matches. But Sonata had that really good G1. And, you know, where it told a really good story of him losing, like, his first, like, 3 matches. And then just going on a tear and having just a fantastic, like, final. But I don't know. I'm rooting for Sonata here, because it's not Evil the person, or Evil, you know, whatever. I forget his Watanabe. I think it's his last name. It's not him. It's just kind of how Ghetto is booking him, and, like, the Bullet Club in general, that really just bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah, this match. I mean, this match just doesn't do anything for me. I mean, I'll watch it. Of course, I'm rooting for Sonata. I think. I think that Sonata takes it. There'd be no reason for Evil to take it unless they're really not going to do anything with Sonata for the next year.
Yeah, I feel like Sonata's got to be, you know, they got the Intercontinental tied up with the, you know, big belt, and maybe they split those off. Because, I mean, I feel like Sonata is like a perfect kind of Intercontinental champion, you know, just a total workhorse and doesn't have the best charisma. He's very stoic, but always puts on a show.
Yeah, for sure. Up next, we have Ishimori, who is the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, against either Takahashi or Hiromu Takahashi, not the Takahashi that I got mixed up with last time. Let's forget that ever happened. I should have deleted it out of the fucking show. Or El Phantasmo. Zach and I agree that Hiromu was going to win that one on night one, so it's going to be Hiromu versus Ishimori. We think, we don't know. Are you taking Hiromu?
I am taking Hiromu.
Yes, me too.
And that actually kind of, I think, lends credence to your next pick whenever you said, like, Jay White would win, because that would have Hiromu winning twice, and then to have Ibushi win twice is almost kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's
a little too harmonious, right?
Yes. Yeah, you don't want to do it like. That's why wrestlers, when they're putting together a show, they're like, hey, are you going to do this? Because if you're going to do this move earlier in the card, then somebody else isn't going to do it later. That's why they all talk about this shit like this. It makes a lot of sense that Hiromu would win both nights. I love Jay White on night two, personally.
Yeah, it does. It makes sense.
All right, so that is your Wrestle Kingdom preview. Sorry, Jason. I know that he would have had a ton to say, and I know that there's tons of J. Bell marks out there, but like we said, you know, he's out making money. Hopefully he's making a ton of it, because he just went over for the predictions, while Zach and I hopefully did better, hopefully did better than that. Any other...
Mm-hmm. I usually watch these live, and I don't think I could do that this year. So I don't know. Maybe. It just depends. I might be live tweeting with you guys. And that's usually a lot of fun. But especially with the two nights in a row, I just don't see it happening. I think I'll probably be watching these in the morning.
So Zach mentioned our socials. Just to remind everybody, it's Bam from Ringside on Facebook, Friends of BFR on Facebook, at BFR Zach with an H, at BFR JCB, at BFR Bill, at BFR Lucha Chris, and at BFR Pod on Twitter, also at BFR Pod on Instagram. I'm looking forward to Wrestle Kingdom, man. Wrestle Kingdom always fucking rules. Nobody does big stuff better than New Japan, and I am excited. Any other, I just asked you that, but you said that you might not be live tweeting. What kind of psycho are you with three kids that you are watching Wrestle Kingdom live?
Oh, man, it's a lot of fun. And usually, again, like, it's usually just the one night, and you just kind of forego a night's sleep. But, with the two nights in a row, it's tough. But it usually is, like, it's really hard, especially, like, whenever it was that really long show. And it was like 5.5 hours, you know, and you get towards the main event, which is like the number one thing you want to see, and you're kind of falling asleep. It can be tough, but yeah.
So I guess the answer is a massive psycho. Let's get to that. Three counts. Yes.
One, two, three.
Okay, we'll get to SmackDown, which was very good in the odds and ends. But I think that we have to talk about not only last night's NXT, but next week's NXT. So NXT started off with Bronson Reed versus Swerve. Bronson Reed got the win in about 6 minutes, which he's going to be a guy that you're going to want to look out for in 2021. I think that he has a lot of big things coming. He's kind of got a Jeff Cobb body type. He is very agile. I was a little surprised that they put him over Swerve, considering that Swerve just turned heel, and he seems to be a pretty good heel. What do you think?
Yeah, and Bronson Reed's awesome. That entrance that he got with that screen and stuff.
It's so amazing.
Cool. It's so cool. And, yeah, I was really surprised because when Swerve came out, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, Swerve Scott, you know, he's doing his turn. You know, like, I've watched him get over in a couple promotions, and he's awesome. And I was like, okay, they're going to do something with him. They turned him, and then they had Bronson Reed come out, and even for the most part, just kind of squash him. And I'm just like, that could have been anybody.
Could have been anybody.
Swerve Scott. Yeah, that's what I didn't get, why they put these matches together, and then they got to be like, oh, well, we got to beat somebody. It's like, no, you actually just didn't have to put the match together in the first place. It could have been
right. Bronson Reed versus... so many. Well, there's so many developmental guys there, obviously, because it's a developmental company. There's also there's just tons of guys that you. I mean, you could have them go over Tyler Breeze. You know, Tyler Breeze is there to be jobbed out. As much as I like Tyler Breeze, I just don't get it. Swerve is on his way up.
Bring Kurt Stallion. You know.
Fucking A.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah. Anybody.
Or
like,
you know,
guys that are out there.
Yes. Yes, of course. Bronson Reed is cool, though, and I am I'm high on Bronson Reed. I expect big things from him in 2021. Next up, we have, speaking of Tyler Breeze, the Grizzled Young Veterans go over Breezango. It was fine. I mean, I like that Breezango has gotten away from the whatever they were doing, the male stripper thing or whatever. I love Breezango. I love Fandango especially, but obviously Grizzly Young Veterans were going to go over here.
Yeah, this was not on my Hulu version of NXT, so I didn't even know what happened.
Didn't miss it. We had Mercedes Martinez squashed a jobber. Mercedes Martinez has to be the luckiest person in professional wrestling because she was in Retribution and got snatched out of Retribution so she could go back to WWE NXT and start squashing jobbers again. Good for her. Not much more to say about the match. Thoughts on Mercedes Martinez?
Yeah, it's like whenever you like narrowly avoid a car accident and you're like, whew, that was close.
Right, she really did. Pete Dunne versus Roderick Strong. I'm glad that they didn't make this too long because this could be an NXT TakeOver main event someday. It's certainly, I've always said I think that Roderick Strong is my favorite worker in NXT. I love him to death. I also love Pete Dunne. Talk about guys that have a lot of up in their future. He's 24 or 25 years old. Dunne goes over, which is good because Dunne, you know, could use a win here and there. He's been getting beat lately. Thoughts on the match?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Just totally echo that sentiment. And if there wasn't all that really heartfelt emotional stuff on AEW, I would have said like this was like the wrestling highlight of the night. But man, that match with MJF and Santana and Ortiz on Dynamite, where MJF like snatched the mask off Brody and he hit him with the kendo stick and all that, and with Hangman, like
tremendous
John Silver. That was really just kind of a total pinnacle.
Yeah, it was one for the books.
But yeah, these were great. This is a great singles match.
There was a couple of great vignettes on NXT also. NXT had a good night too. Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa had a dual vignette getting ready for their Fight Pit match next week. Now, Zach, as we've mentioned before, I am 41 years old, and they started talking about this Fight Pit, and it looked super badass. And then they showed highlights of Timothy Thatcher beating Matt Riddle in a Fight Pit before, and I don't remember that at all. Am I losing my mind?
No, I don't remember that either.
Did you see the highlights that they showed from it, or was that not on your Hulu version?
This wasn't on my Hulu either.
It was a spectacular vignette. Timothy Thatcher, they got to start giving this guy some wins. I hope he wins next week, even though I love Ciampa. I'm wearing a Ciampa shirt right now. this fight pit thing looks badass, and you can only lose by being knocked out or submitted. You can't lose by a pin, which is the match next week between Ciampa and Thatcher. I'll tell you what, man, I am looking forward to that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, for sure. That's great.
Both of these
like promotions are going to have great shows next week.
Yeah, I guess we can't do the Beefers next week because we'll have Wrestle Kingdom, New Year's Evil, and what's the AEW one's called?
New Year's Smash.
Did you see the Finn Balor, Kyle O'Reilly segment in ring?
Yeah, that was good. I like that they're rehashing this. I especially liked even like last week where so essentially like the build for this match is great because all you have to do is remind people about how goddamn great the last match was, and they're going to want to see it again. And that's all they're doing with this match. Like, you know, Kyle O'Reilly's coming out and he's saying, you know, I've been like participating for 15 years. Like, I want the real prize, right?
Yeah, I thought Kyle O'Reilly's section of that promo was spectacular. Finn Balor's promos are kind of he's kind of a one-trick pony. Sorry to all the marks out there.
Well, he kind of gets a little cute, and he uses, like, his gimmick is to use, like, insider terms, like, in his promos and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, it's kind of clever and, like, cute, but it doesn't, like, do anything to make me want to, like, see the matches outside of just Finn Balor. We know he's awesome.
Right. So. The insider terms don't sell a match. They just, they really don't, like, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier with Tanahashi having to win more so that his losses count more. It's like the less insider terms that are used, you know, when CM Punk did the pipe bomb promo, it was mind blowing because nobody had used insider terms like that for 6 years since the promo by the guy, the announcer. I can't even fucking remember his name. Jason be all over this. Anyway, I liked what they did. I liked that Karrion Kross came out and interrupted them, and the Damian Priest Karrion Kross beatdown made a lot of sense. You know?
Yeah.
It was good. It seems like good storytelling.
There's essentially like four guys surrounding the title picture right now. It's like Finn Balor, Kyle O'Reilly, Pete Dunne, and Karrion Kross. So I don't know if we're going to see a four-way or if there's going to be some kind of like qualifier or whatever after this.
Well, Karrion Kross never lost it. So
yeah, so I feel like Karrion Kross should come back and be able to get a match right away. Like, he should be the automatic number one contender.
It would
like,
make no sense. Bullshit. It would make sense in kayfabe. The Rhea Ripley vignette coming up next was also just very good. Did you see this?
I did. It was very good. The only thing that annoyed me about it is like...
Hold on. Before you say it, are you going to say the only thing that annoyed you about it was the way she said tattoo?
No, not at all. She's Australian, though, so I guess that probably has something to do
She with said tattoo. She goes. We will get matching to-dos. And I was like, I rewound it. I actually wrote down TADOO, just so I could remember how she pronounced it. To-do.
You made a big to-do over her to-do.
Fucking fuck you. Oh, we got matching to-dos. All right. What was the thing that
annoyed me was like, why didn't they show this like 2.5 months ago when they started feuding? Like, they're about ready to have like the blow off match, right? Like, not, like, and yeah, it was a great video package, but like, this would have helped me care about the feud over the long term, like best friends becoming, you know, rivals, and essentially yeah. It would have been even better if they would have like actually done some teaming on camera because they showed them as like part of a team, and if they would have like split and like Raquel would have gone off with Dakota and like we saw that like schism instead of now they're just kind of like retroactively saying like, oh, they used to be really good friends, and it's like, well, like, show yeah. me, don't tell me.
Yeah, right? I had no idea they were good friends. No idea.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's the whole thing with like any kind of like entertainment, performance art, like writing, anything. It's show, don't tell. Show me that they're good friends. Don't just tell me. Like, you know, it doesn't mean anything.
Coming up next, we had Santos Escobar cut a promo. And I'll tell you what, this is what I've been wanting. Grand Metalik and Lince Dorado come out and interrupt. And Grand Metalik is legit one of the best four or five workers in WWE. The guy doesn't get to do shit. They interrupt. Next week, we have a Santos Escobar versus Grand Metalik match for the Cruiserweight Championship. This is what we need, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I mean, the guy is a fucking dynamo. He's awesome.
If you don't know, and if you have the network, go watch the Cruiserweight Classic, and you'll see what we're talking about.
Yeah, he is unbelievable. Austin Theory. Okay, so, you know, I hate to put you on the spot like this. Actually, I don't.
Do ya?
You were upset when Leon Ruff initially won the North American title because you said they kind of did it as a one-off and it was kind of a joke. And I was like, man, just putting him in the conversation with Gargano and Damian Priest is a boon to the Leon Ruff stock. Are you willing to admit that you were wrong?
I won't say that. I will say that he looked better in this match than he has in any of the other matches. Like that three-way, he was like a total afterthought. And, you know, he was like the third wheel, and he was the champion.
This match was legit great.
Yeah, this is a really good match. And if they would have kind of, if this is how he would have been shown and treated, instead of like all the comedy shit and all the Damian Priest looking out for him, you know, kind of shit, then I would have had like way fewer problems with it, and maybe no problem with it at all. Like, cause it wasn't the fact that he won the title. It was just the manner in which they portrayed him.
All right, let's mark it down here at the 55-minute marker that Zach can't admit when he was wrong. Okay, so Gargano goes over. It was a fun match. Dexter Lumis comes out at the end. I don't know why he's the host or whatever. But
dude, this has to be the worst decision for a host in the history of hosts. I mean, they would have been better off having Harvey Weinstein host the Oscars, and it would still be a better decision.
That's so, man, can you imagine the ratings? Can you imagine how many people would watch that? So next week on New Year's Evil, it is a banger of a show. We have Grand Metalik versus Santos Escobar for the Cruiserweight Championship. We have Timothy Thatcher versus Tommaso Ciampa in a fight pit match where you have to lose by submission or knockout. We have Karrion Kross versus Damian Priest. We have Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Gonzalez in a last man standing match. Always not one of my favorite types of matches, but. And then we have Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly for the big belt. Which one of those matches are you looking forward to most? That's a bunch of good matches.
That is a bunch of good matches. I got to say Finn O'Reilly, too, because that first one was one of the WWE or NXT matches of best matches of the year. But I too am a very big fan of Timothy Thatcher, and this is kind of his wheelhouse, and Ciampa's phenomenal. So I think that'll be good, but I'm also, I think probably out of all of them, I really am looking forward to this Grand Metalik Escobar match. I really hope they let him rip.
Yeah, I hope they let him rip too, and I hope they give him a good 15-20 minutes, because it's going to be hard on a 2-hour show, but man, that's a jam-packed NXT episode. Just
it is.
Completely jam-packed. And that's going to do it for our three counts.
One, two, three.
All right, just a couple of real quick things. Miz got his Money in the Bank briefcase back.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
I'm okay with this because this is a story they've never told with the Money in the Bank briefcase.
That's because it's a terrible story.
Obviously, you're not okay with it.
Oh, I hate it. Like, it's just they do everything they can to kill every gimmick that they have. Like,
you know,
Hell in a Cell is a cool gimmick. Let's do it every year, all the time, for no reason. And, you know, Money in the Bank is a cool gimmick, and that's fine to do that every year because, yeah, there are only so many stories, but, like, it's too much.
You know, earlier this week I was talking to my wife, and you got brought up, and she says Zach likes it. And I go, Zach likes everything except for WWE main roster. And then Roman Reigns versus KO, did you get a chance to watch that cage match?
So that SmackDown was a good show. I will 100% admit it. Like, they really put their best foot forward. They knew they were going to get a big lead in with that NFL game on Christmas night. And
it was a banger.
Like, hey, we're putting KO and Roman Reigns in a goddamn cage right off the bat.
Yep.
And, everybody performed really well.
Yep. Big E won the Intercontinental, which was cool. Daniel Bryan announced himself as a Royal Rumble entrant, which of course he is, but I think Daniel Bryan is actually might be the favorite because Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns is a big time WrestleMania match.
Yeah, and remember we were supposed to get it, like, and then it had like one of the weirdest stories ever. Remember like that forklift and like all those boxes fell on Roman?
Oh, yeah. And that's right.
Like, and then we just never got the match. We got like Eric Rowan versus Roman for a while. That was weird.
Yeah, I do remember that. I got to get going to my sister's house for a party. We got birthdays this week. Not anything else you want to talk about?
No. I already mentioned the New Japan Strong. I was having a lot of fun catching up on those when I had my wisdom teeth out. So,
aren't you glad your kids weren't watching Monday Night Raw when Alexa Bliss poured gasoline all over herself?
Yes, for sure, because for a family-friendly thing and for a don't try this at home. I know you're not supposed to try anything that you see on the show at home, but the storyline is just getting out of control. Like, it's got to end.
It's like they're leaning into it because they know it's so bad.
Oh, yeah, it's almost like a parody of itself.
Yes.
This is Ban from Ringside.
All right,
welcome.
We got some
to Visionary.
Oh shit. Okay, we got some birthdays this week. We got really only four. Danny Burch is 39. That motherfucker is 2 years younger than me. That is unbelievable. Jimmy Hart is 77. Jimmy Hart's still alive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jim Ross, JR, the voice of wrestling, is 68. Canyon, who better than Canyon? Would have been 51. R.I.P., you son of a bitch. I loved you. Hey, everybody. We know there's tons of podcasts to listen to, so we appreciate you guys listening to our podcasts. For F&B Eatery, for Jason Cornelius Bell, Make That Money, for Murray the Murray Man Murray, for Lucha Chris, for Two Beers Zach Pullman.
Cheers.
Everybody, Black Lives Matter. Support your local weed dealers. Support your local restaurants. I am Bill Vagy, and never forget to boo the heels. Boo!
Boo!
Happy New Year, motherfuckers.